and sports and weather next. Jackson here on Radio 9 with Jay Thurber, and how about this?
Your front row center at the ball game, and you don't have to fight the crowd. Turn your radio on as loud as you care to, then prepare to enjoy it.
In college basketball action, your Carnegie Mellon Tartans women's team defeated Emory in overtime last night by a score of 78-66. The Tartans came back from a big deficit at the half to win that game. 78-66 gives the Tartans sole position of second place in the conference. Not so much good luck for the men's team. They could not overcome number 11-ranked Emory. They lost last night 97-72. Both teams back in action when they take on the University of Rochester on Sunday. Elsewhere in college basketball, the Pitt Panthers men's team are traveling to North Carolina. They play the Tar Heels this afternoon. Game time is at 4 o'clock. Duquesne Dukes hosting Loyola at 6 o'clock up there on the Buff. And the Pitt Panthers women travel to Southern Methodist to play the Mustangs on Sunday. Pittsburgh Penguins defeated the New York Rangers last night by a score of 3-2. Sidney Crosby was not in the lineup. He did practice with the team yesterday, but he was out with an injury. That's the first time he's been out of a regular season game since 2022. Penguins take on the Philadelphia Flyers this evening. Puck drops at 7 o'clock.
WRCT weather.
Rain likely this afternoon, high near 38. Rain overnight, could be windy at times, low 28. Mostly cloudy on Sunday with a high of 36. Monday, mostly sunny, high 37. And then on Tuesday, snow likely with a high near 36 degrees. Right now, 33 degrees in West Mifflin. It's 32. Street level at the corner of Forbes and Morwood in Oakland at WRCT. Cliff Richard's going to take us to news time.
go baby, shake my baby, please don't lose it. There's rhythm that gets into your heart and soul. Hey, let me tell you, baby, it's called rock and roll. They say it's gonna die, but honey, be let's face it. They just don't know what's going to replace it. Little have got nothing on real country music that just drives along.
That's Cliff Richard. And I'm Jay Thurber. The website, jaythurbershow.com. Also on Facebook, Blue Sky and Mastodon at Jay Thurber Show. Broadcasting this week from my laundry room, I'm Jay Thurber. Thank you so much for tuning in. You're tuned to 88.3 WYRCT Pittsburgh and Tube City Online Radio in McKeesport. The news is next.
You're listening to Jay Thurber from WYRCT Pittsburgh.
It's 1 o'clock. More music now.
Story news in Washington. I'm Nina Marepotz of the latest world news. Hamas has released the names of three hostages to be freed in Gaza on Saturday in exchange for Palestinian prisoners detained by Israel. They are Eli Sharabi, Ohad Ben Ami, and Or Levy. 18 hostages have been freed since the ceasefire began on the 19th of January. Israel has released 383 prisoners in return. Hamas says another 183 are to be freed on Saturday. U.S. President Donald Trump says he'll announce reciprocal tariffs on several countries next week. His comments came during a bilateral meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba in Washington. More than 6 million people could die from HIV and AIDS in the next 4 years, according to the United Nations AIDS Agency, should U.S. President Donald Trump pull global funding. While there's currently a waiver on HIV/AIDS programs following Trump's announcement of foreign aid funding freezes, the UN says there remains widespread confusion that's already resulted in several job cuts. Jody Jacobs has more.
The United Nations HIV/AIDS Agency, or UNAIDS, says there's widespread confusion following Donald Trump's executive order. The agency reports disruptions to life-saving medication in several parts of the world. UNAIDS Deputy Executive Director Christine Steglin.
Any penny, any cut, any pause will matter for all of us. 50% of our own funding comes from the U.S. government.
Foreign aid donations from the U.S. are on hold for 90 days, with PEPFAR, the U.S.'s emergency plan for AIDS relief, being exempt for now. It's the world's largest HIV/AIDS program. Now UNAIDS says if these funding cuts go ahead, they predict a 400% increase in AIDS deaths between 2025 and 2029. Jody Jacobs, New York.
The International Criminal Court has condemned the U.S. president's decision to impose sanctions on its staff. Donald Trump has accused the court of illegitimate and baseless actions against the U.S. and Israel. Europe correspondent William Denzelow reports.
In a statement, the ICC says that the U.S. executive order seeks to harm its independent and impartial judicial work. It adds that the court will continue to provide justice and hope to millions of innocent victims of atrocities around the world. Back in November, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Israel's prime minister over alleged war crimes committed in Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu denies this and calls the ICC corrupt and anti-Semitic. The ICC is calling on its 125 members, civil society and all nations to stand united for justice and fundamental human rights. William Denslow, Brussels.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Hello, audience. Please don't murmur. You are listening to Jay Thurber. He is sometimes entertaining. And I'm telling you there's no use in complaining. He likes Freebird and Tom Lehrer. Narrow neckties, he's a wearer. Though his show may have some merit, it's Jay Thurber, you'll just have to grin and bear it.
Stones getting us started here in the 1 o'clock hour, 108 Much More Music Time. I'm Jay Thurber. Thank you so much for tuning in. 412-385-7450. Also on Facebook, Mastodon, and Blue Sky at Jay Thurber Show. This is Sam and Dave on Radio 9. Happy Saturday afternoon to you.
You sweeter than the honey that the bees make. So, sister, your brown sugar. Sweeter than the icing on the best cake. So, sister, your brown sugar. To me all night long.
Cheryl called 412-385-7450. She wants to send a song out for her brother Bob, who's in the hospital. Going out to Bob from Cheryl. These are the Hollies. You say them, we play them on the Big 900.
The road is long.
It's a long, long
on Radio 9 at 1:15. Much more music time. Our long-lost phone call with Myron Cope is coming up just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned for that. I'm Jay Thurber. I hope you know what your name is. This is April Stevens and Nino Tempo to sing A Little Deep Purple on this super solid gold Saturday afternoon in the Steel City. Thanks for listening to Radio 9.
When a deep purple the sleepy garden walls, and the stars begin to twinkle in the night. In the midst of the memory, you wander on back to me.
Mr. Pitiful, that's how I got my fame.
shredding Mr. Pitiful on Radio 9. Our interview with Myron Cope coming up in just a couple of minutes after we check your weather. Here is Sonny James.
Only silver dove, sweet Apache May. Only silver dove, sweet Apache May.
Alone, all alone by the campfire, she dreamed of her love, her delight.
The song Apache on Radio 9.
WRCT.
At 1:23 chime time, our interview with Myron Cope coming up right after I take care of a brief message. Also check your full-time Radio 9 weather forecast. So, an unusual show. If you are tuning in for the first time, welcome. If you are a regular listener, I think it's very important for our listeners to be regular. I had a big bowl of All Brand this morning. I'm broadcasting. If we did not have this Myron Cope thing coming up, and I'm going to explain that in a second, I probably would have done something that I don't do very often, which is run a rerun, because I fell on Thursday and really tore the dickens out of my back, and that's not what I want to say. But I'm feeling better. I'm actually upright and mobile today. I actually got some sleep last night. I did not get any sleep the night before, so I'm broadcasting from the laundry room of my house, because I did not think I could make the stairs on the studio today, but I did not want to not do a show, especially once we promised that we had this special broadcast for Super Bowl weekend. It's an appropriate place. This is where the ratings go anyways, right down the drain. Support for 88.3 WRCT comes in part from Sidecar Bakery in North Oakland. Sidecar is an independent coffee shop with a full coffee bar, ready-made breakfast sandwiches, breakfast pastries, savory hand pies, cakes, and pies, all made in the bakery next door. Sidecar offers a place to study, eat, and hang out with your friends in a cafe setting. Open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturdays, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sundays. For more information, visit their website at sidecar412.com. And if you or your organization are interested in underwriting on 88.3 WRCT, email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities.
WRCT weather.
Showers likely this afternoon with a high near 38, rain overnight, windy at times with a low of 28, mostly cloudy on Sunday, a high 36, Monday mostly sunny. High 37. Tuesday, snow likely. High 36. Right now, 34 in Washington, 35 in Beaver County. It's 35 at the Allegheny County Airport and street level at the corner of Forbes and Morwood in Oakland. It's 34 degrees at WRCT. So here's the deal. Back in 2002, the late, great Myron Cope, and let me set this up for those of you who are not from Pittsburgh or maybe a little bit younger, Myron Cope was to Pittsburgh Steelers football what... Gosh, I don't even know who you would compare it to. Vin Scully was to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Bob Uecker was to the Milwaukee Brewers. He was the voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers for 30-some years. Also was a tremendously talented author. Hosted one of the first sports talk radio shows in the United States. And was a very colorful character, among other things, invented the terrible towel. So back in 2002, Myron Cope wrote a book called Double Yoy that was a sort of a loose autobiography memoir, and I got a copy of it, and I was invited to interview him. So we set up the interview, and I was no more technically adept in 2002 than I am in 2025. I was just a lot younger. And I taped the interview, and it was unbroadcastable. There was this loud hum in the background. I used one of those, if you're old enough to remember, the little Radio Shack suction cup things. I didn't know you weren't supposed to use that. That's what I used to tape the interview over the phone, and it sounded terrible. So I wrote a story about Myron Cope and about the book, but I was unable to broadcast the interview on the show. Now, fast forward to a couple of weeks ago. I interviewed Myron Cope's daughter, Elizabeth, and her co-author, Dan Joseph. They are the author of a new biography of Myron Cope called Behind the Yoy. And I thought, I bet I still have that tape somewhere. We've moved houses, and I knew I had seen it in the house move. So I got the cassette tape out, and it was just as bad as I remembered. But you know what we have in 2025 that we didn't have almost 25 years ago is cheap digital signal processing and filtering. So I spent a couple hours actually filtering this thing through several different layers of noise reduction, and I got it to the point where it's listenable. I had to re-record a couple of my parts, so you might hear some edits here. But here it is. This is a never-before interview with young Jay Thurber, recorded in 2002 with the late, great Myron Cope.
Well, thank you for taking the time. And I guess the first question I want to ask you is, I'm always interested in how people get ready for a broadcast. And
I should set this up. The very next day, I believe the Steelers were playing the Vikings, I think. And we had to keep the interview to 20 minutes because he was getting ready for the broadcast. So here we go.
You said this is your prep day.
Yeah, well, usually it's spread out over a few days, but this week I got squeezed in, so this is it. I got to get it done today.
What is your prep work? How do you get ready for your prep?
How do you prep work? Well, I follow the Steelers, of course, constantly. So I'm up to date on them pretty well. I'm interested in learning about the opposing team because there's so many changes around the league. Every year now, free agents moving around one thing and another, but I've always gone about it this way. And the teams themselves in the NFL are very good in that they produce a mountain of information about themselves. And so I pour through that, check a few things out, one thing and another, you know. And Minnesota really sent a mountain of stuff.
What do you take into the booth with you then?
All kinds of notes on index cards. That I read and reread and reread right up to practically the time I go on the air, hoping that maybe 10% or 25%, if I'm really lucky, will stick to my brain. I hardly ever look at the cards once I'm underway, but I just study these things hoping that a percentage of it will stick to my brain and when it's appropriate because of developments on the field or whatever, that I'll remember some of that stuff.
Now, I heard you on with Doug Hirth a week or two ago, and he said you're still writing on a typewriter.
Yeah, it's about 40 years old. It's a Hermes portable manual typewriter.
Have you gotten into the computer or internet thing at all?
Total computer illiterate. When I started writing my book a year ago, February, I went out and bought $1,300 worth of computer stuff because I was told you must do this on a computer. And my next door neighbors, who were helping me with the book, he's an attorney and former English teacher. He was one of my three local editors as I wrote the book. And his wife was very helpful in that after 3 days, they spent long hours of 3 days trying to teach me. And after the third day, it was about 10:30 at night when I left my house, and I said, hell with it, and I took all the stuff back and went back to the old Hermit. But Carol next door, they're Bob and Carol Pass are their names, and she took over. You know, as I turn out the chapters on my typewriter, she would convert the manuscript to computer.
Well, that's a hell of a friend.
You betcha.
Yeah, that's one hell of a friend. Something I noticed about the book, I don't want to get too philosophical, but I noticed you don't talk too much about growing up, about your childhood.
Well, because I'm a typewriter, and my lead editor, Roy McHugh, also believes in typewriting, and I didn't think that my growing up as a kid was that important or arresting for the reader. It was a choice of choices constantly to make, and it's not an autobiography, it's a memoir.
Mm-hmm.
It's only partly autobiographical, and then I move into other areas, my takes on various public figures and sports figures I've come into contact with over the years, and of course there are essays in which I shoot off my mouth. as Roy always preached to me, you know, there were a million anecdotes I could tell, but you write an anecdote to make a point. And once you've made the point, get on to the next point. Don't just see how many anecdotes you can pour into the book. So my childhood was not that arresting to a reader, I don't believe. I talk about it somewhat, my teens and all, but...
One of the things you talk about is your boxing misadventure.
There, and that I thought people, you know, I wanted people to have a chuckle now and then in the book. And my editors told me there are times when you laugh out loud.
There are. There are times when you read the book and you laugh out loud, but there are also times when you really kind of pull the heartstrings, too, and not in a bad way.
Well, the cover says a revealing memoir, and in some ways it's revealing if anybody really cares about things I haven't talked about in the past on a radio or television, you know.
I know when you gave up your daily radio show, you talked a lot about Mildred, your wife. Was it hard to write that chapter about Mrs. Cope?
Yes, that was a very difficult chapter to write. I started it on Easter Sunday afternoon, as I wrote in the book, you know, and it was mm-hmm. raining outside. Not exactly a day to pick your spirits up, and
no.
Then I finished it the next day. Yes, it was difficult because I still miss the lady very much.
Have you ever put that down on paper before?
No.
Okay.
No, Mildred, as I describe her, was not a person who coveted the spotlight.
No.
She was cooperative when media wanted to do stories, family-type features, you know, but she never, you know, really enjoyed being out front.
Let's jump back to some happier stuff. I asked you a little bit about your childhood. Tell us a little bit more, whereabouts in Pittsburgh did you grow up?
In Squirrel Hill.
Okay.
And what were your influences as a kid, either writing or being on the radio or what? What influenced your outlook on life?
At first, I thought I had aspirations briefly of becoming a lawyer, but once I started writing on the high school paper, I knew that what I wanted to be was a newspaper man, and there was nothing else in mind. That's where my passion lay, to be a newspaper man.
Did you go to Alderdice?
Yes. I wanted to be a newspaper man or a major league infielder. I take stock of all the short guys who had made it in the big leagues and dream of it. Go to bed at night thinking about them and saying, you can do it, kid.
When did you decide that being an infielder was not going to be your forte?
Well, you recall, my story about the pirate triad?
Yes.
I guess it was then and there.
Okay.
And the coach says, okay, kid, you can go home now. The scout, rather.
I'm jumping around a little bit because I know your time is short.
I am on a crusher of a day here working, like I said, trying to get 3 days' work crammed into one.
Yep, and I want to talk a little bit about broadcasting. You write about Howard Cosell, and my impression of sports broadcasting is that there was really before Howard Cosell and after Howard Cosell, that things really changed after he entered the field. How did sports broadcasting change, in your opinion, when Howard came on the scene, first in radio and television?
Well, you know, he always described himself as a guy who tells it like it is, which is a grammatical error.
Yes.
And he talked like he was a trailblazer for the truth. That was not the case, because by then, you know, there had existed a tradition that sports writers did not necessarily, sports casters, rather, did not necessarily be critical of athletes or management. They tried to walk the fence, more or less, most of them, because if they got a job, for example, broadcasting a baseball team's games or football team's, they felt like they were safer with their job that way. But Howard wasn't the first to deviate from that.
Who was?
I don't know. I have no idea, but I know I did from the very beginning when I started broadcasting the Steeler games in 1970, which, by the way, was the year that Monday Night Football started and Howard became a smash hit.
Well, then if only you had been in New York, maybe, instead.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, I'm just saying that maybe that would have been you instead on Monday Night Football rather than...
Well, I never had any desire to be anywhere but in Pittsburgh. The magazine editors used to say, and fellow magazine writers, when are you moving to New York? And I'd say, not unless I'm ordered to. Because, you know, I was under contract first to the Saturday Evening Post and then Sports Illustrated. But I've always liked it here in Pittsburgh. And unless I had to go to New York, I was staying put. I loved visiting New York in those days. It was a lot of fun, but I was happy where I'm at. And when you're happy where you're at, maybe it's not so wise to shoot for New York.
Let's talk a little bit about being on the radio, because you really, in my mind anyways, you sort of pioneered the sports radio talk show in this town. You mentioned in the book that there was somebody on KDKA who was doing, I guess, a non-offensive sort of, I gather, a little bit of a non-offensive or maybe ineffectual sports talk show in the evening.
No, my predecessor at WT, Tom Bender.
Okay.
But the show wasn't working, it wasn't producing ratings, and so they called me in, as I relate in the book. Tom was a longtime friend of mine, and there's no way I wanted to take his job, but the GM said, if it's not a matter of taking Tom's job, because if you don't take this and try it, we're just going to replace it with music. We'll discontinue the show.
What kind of show was Tom Bender doing then? Was it a typical kind of sports talk show then?
I doubt it. My show, you mean?
No, his show.
Well, there weren't other sports talk shows around. I think it was the only one in town at the time.
Okay.
And sports talk was still in its infancy.
Is that good or bad? I mean, we now have in Pittsburgh two full-time sports talk show stations. New York has two or three. I think every town seems to have at least one. Is it good to have that much sports talk? Is it useful? Does it add anything?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of whether it's a question of whether it's good or bad, Jason. I mean, there's obviously a demand for it. Sports has become so huge because of its growth on television. You have people, a greater percentage of the populace who are intensely interested in in many things happening around the country in sports. And, radio stations and television stations, they don't put on sports shows with the idea of nobody listening to them or watching them. So if the demand decreases, so will the shows. If it stays strong, the shows will continue. But good or bad, hey, we're talking sports. It's not virtue versus evil.
Where did all this sports talk and all this commercial interest in sports come from? Because as you talk about in the book, in the 50s and back to the 1940s, the sports pages of the Pittsburgh newspapers, I think you say, were pretty abysmal. Where did sports explode as such a big industry in people's mind?
Television did it.
So television needed to feed the television beast.
Television was growing itself. So naturally, they were looking for programming, and with the growth of television grew sports.
Going to pause right here. You're tuned to 88.3 WIRCT Pittsburgh and Tube City Online Radio in McKeesport. It is 1:41. I'm Jay Thurber. This interview was recorded in 2002 with the late great Steelers broadcaster Myron Cope, who passed away in 2008 and has never before been broadcast. Here's the second half.
And football in particular was very telegenic, a game that could be followed on television. It's always been hockey's liability that they don't seem to televise as well as football, baseball, and basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But television was growing. Remember, it was a post-World War II thing. It didn't exist before then.
Do you listen to any of these sports talk radio as you travel? Or
when I'm driving.
And what do you think of it, having done a sports talk show for so long? What do you think of the tenor of it?
Well, there are different types of shows. You read my chapter talk shows and shock shows.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Well, that expresses it. Like anybody else, there are shows I enjoy and shows I don't.
I don't remember if you answer this in the book, and maybe this is a dumb question. I apologize. Other than Steelers games, did you ever call any other sports?
College football, that's all, when I was pressed into emergency situations by the station.
Tell me a little bit about Jack Fleming. What kind of a guy was Jack Fleming?
Well, Jack was a swell guy. You know, he was an old pro. He not only did West Virginia football and basketball and the Steelers, but for a time he was the announcer for the Chicago Bulls basketball team.
Oh, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, he traveled back and forth like a maniac.
Good
and
God.
He was a big, easy-going guy, and we had a lot of fun. And as I wrote in the book, when I was foisted upon him as a total amateur and he being the consummate pro, it was a trying time for Jack. But somehow we got through it, and we became a team and good friends and all, and it was a great experience.
Well, there seemed to be chemistry between you and Jack on the Steeler broadcast, and there seems to be chemistry, too, between you and Bill and Tunch.
And now Craig Wolfley on the side.
Yeah, well, for sure. Well, of course, you had worked with Bill Hillgrove at WTAE, so that was not a completely out-of-the-blue partnership there.
Yeah, I'm lucky in that, I've been lucky in that all my 33rd year, there have only been two Steeler head coaches in all that time, which is remarkable.
Sure it is.
And I'm lucky in that I haven't gone through a succession of broadcasting partners. It was Jack and I there for a long time, and then they decided to bring a third guy into the booth, so Merrill Hodge was the man, and he only stayed, 2 years or so. He was ambitious to get on a network, and he did.
Yeah,
and Tunch replaced him, and now Craig Wolfley beefs us up on the sideline. But all of these guys, for me, have been very easy to work with. My approach to the thing is that it's supposed to be fun and have some laughs along the way. And I think that's been shared by these people I've worked with.
What makes them, in your mind, what makes them sound good, or what makes for good chemistry when you're all together in the booth?
First of all, friendship does. And Jack and now Twinch and I and Billy and Wolf have been friends throughout. I imagine that there are a number of booths where that is not the case, where people are jealous of one another, or the play-by-play man tries to sit on the color analyst. I imagine that, and I've heard a few stories over the years, so I imagine that happens. But we're pals, So we sit down there to do a broadcast, and we're having fun.
So in the last couple of months, now we have lost Jack Buck, we lost Chick Hearn, Harry Carey died a few years ago, And it seems that the people who end up replacing them, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, are often fairly bland. They don't maybe have the style or the flair of some of the broadcasters. Vin Scully, I believe, we still have Vin with us, don't we? So where are these very colorful sportscasters going? Why, or where is the next Jack Buck, or for that matter, where is the next Myron Cope? And why are they not coming along in these towns?
Well, I don't know that that's the case or not, really, Chase, and I'm not familiar enough with who's broadcasting where. I don't follow that kind of stuff because I just go in there and do my own thing. Hey, the guys you mentioned, were all old-timers, and who was it? Some interviewer called me a month or two ago and pointing that out to me, said, maybe you're next.
Oh, Jesus.
Thank you.
Good Lord.
I'm an old geezer. But anyhow.
Why would somebody say something like that?
Well, you ask me. You tell me, rather. But anyhow, I laughed, and we went on from there. But, I am not the kind of guy who constantly sits and listens to television of any kind. I watch games, I watch the news, and I find myself doing less of that and reading more books. I do not watch SportsCenter because I don't care if Denver beat whoever, Utah, in the NBA last night. My interest in sports has dwindled so that my football, I still love baseball and wish the Pirates would do something, you know.
Oh, boy, yeah.
The pro football, I'm as intensely interested as I ever was.
It's 23 years ago, and the Pirates still haven't done anything.
But I'm not a SportsCenter watcher, that sort of thing, so I'm perhaps not, I know I'm not an authority on what other broadcasters are doing in the networks or in local stations. I assume there's some damn good ones out there coming along, and they'll take the places of the geezers if they're given the leeway to. You know, I was fortunate in that I never had interference from either my station or the Steelers. And if you've got the stuff and you're given that kind of liberty, you should be able to make the most of it and have a style. And whether style is out there and coming along, I couldn't tell you because I tend to read more books than watch television anymore.
What kind of stuff are you reading?
I read novels. I read some nonfiction, things I never got a chance to read when I was, you know, working 70, 80 hours a week in broadcasting.
Whoa.
You've always struck me as kind of a well-read fellow, and of course you started out in newspapers rather than in sports radio. Could you have seen yourself doing kind of a general news-type talk show? Maybe something along the lines of like what Doug Hirth does?
I never imagined myself being on radio doing anything.
Okay.
Or television. I was a writer.
Right.
And as the book relates, I got that call out of the blue.
Right.
Would you have ever wanted to do a news talk type show?
I had no desire to because it never entered my mind that I had any talents for it. I mean, I was happy writing. That was what I was cut out to be.
I have to say, and I'm not trying to butter you up or anything, but it's very nice to get a whole book of your writing again. Are you planning to do any more writing, or are you semi-retired now?
Nope. I'm semi-retired, and I don't have another book in me. That's it. Writing is hard work for me.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, though, I've always sensed, both in listening to your commentaries on TV and to your talk shows, and in the book it comes through, too. I don't want to get philosophical here, but I get the sense that Myron Cope has some doubts about himself. You talk in the book that if you ever decide when you're on the Steelers broadcasts that it's time to go, or whatever, that you're going to go. So where does that come from? Where you've obviously had great success. I don't think you have to prove anything to anybody. Where do these doubts come from?
It comes from being a realist and knowing my age. But I've been saying that since I got into my 60s. Apparently it hasn't happened. They haven't bounced me out. And when I've even said to... a couple of years ago, I said to the GM at WDVE, I said to him, you know, Bob Roof was his name, in the off season, I said, there were a couple of games last year at least when I sensed that I wasn't seeing everything that I should on the field. And he said, well, I never noticed that my ratings went up again. So, and I feel good about what we've done in the preseason so far this year.
There's long been a promotion in this town, turn down the TV sound and turn up Jack Fleming and Myron Cope, or turn up Bill Hillgrove and Myron Cope. Have you ever seen the numbers on how many people in Pittsburgh do turn down the TV sound during a Steelers broadcast?
The last survey I ever heard talked about was about 10 years ago, and we had slightly more than 50% of the TV audience turning down the sound. I'm sure there have been other studies done that show pretty much the same thing. I hear people make reference to them, but I don't pay attention to that stuff.
Okay.
It is a great satisfaction, though, to have that occurring, because it tells you, you know, you got fans out there who like what you're doing.
Well, yeah, and you're on FM now, so they get to hear you in stereo now.
Yeah, well, we know the home team better than the visiting network guys do. That's the whole thing. They come in on a Friday or Saturday, you know, the coaches make a command performance before them in a production meeting. They talk to a few players, and then they go on the air and say, so-and-so told me yesterday. I think that's something exclusive. We know, I think fans appreciate that we know the team, that we're following it constantly.
Well, since my salary and my day job comes from the University of Pittsburgh, I have to ask you, have you been down to see Pitt recently? Your old alma mater, the Panthers, recently.
No, I take them in when I can on television, but remember, I'm traveling Saturdays with the football team very often.
Well, I thank you very much for taking some time to talk with me. Good luck.
And you know, the publisher's ground rules, and I welcome them, is a 20-minute limit on radio interviews.
Mr. Cope, take care of yourself. Thank you so much for talking to me.
All right, Jason.
Good luck tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
So other than the giggling idiot asking the questions, that was the late, great Myron Cope, recorded in 2002, an interview I was not able to broadcast because the sound quality was not good, and was able to finally clean it up all these years later. So that's your treat for Super Bowl weekend, or the big game, as we're supposed to call it, because the Super Bowl is a trademark of the National Football League, and they have no interest in you getting to use it. Yeah. Hope you enjoyed that. I will throw that up on my website at jthurbershow.com at some point if you want to re-listen to it. I don't know if it's the greatest interview that was ever done, but how often do you get to hear an interview with Myron Cope? Incidentally, if you want, his book is still available. You can go to skyhorsepublishing.com. The book that he was promoting back then was called Double Joy, A Half Century of Sports Writing and Broadcasting by Myron Cope. So we're going to check your sports and weather right after this important message.
This is Jack Fleming, voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Listen for all the Steelers action all season long here on Radio 1250 WTAE. Join Myron Cope and me right here this Sunday.
This afternoon, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers against the New York Jets in New York. Pro Preview will be on the air at 12 noon, followed by the Chuck Knoll Show and Steelers Warm-Up. And be listening after the game for Steelers Hotline.
And this is 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh and Tube City Online Radio at McKeesport, in case the FCC is listening. I think we still have an FCC, right?
Your front row center at the ball game, and you don't have
who knows
to fight the crowd. Turn your radio on as loud as you care to, then prepare to enjoy it.
In the big game, the Kansas City Chiefs go for a three-peat in a rematch against the Eagles on Sunday in New Orleans. If you are planning to attend the Super Bowl and you think maybe you can get a ticket from a scalper, well, you can expect a price drop compared to last year. The entry-level price for a ticket from a scalper is currently around $2,600. That's actually down 50% from last year. They attribute the price drop to several factors, including the fact that the Caesars Superdome in New Orleans can accommodate 15,000 more fans, as well as the availability of hotel rooms and fan fatigue. What else to tell you about in college basketball action? Your Carnegie Mellon Tartans last night split two games with the Eagles of Emory. The women's team defeated Emory in overtime by a score of 78-66. That gives the Tartans second place in the conference. The men's team lost to Emory by a score of 97-72. Both teams host Rochester on Sunday. Pitt Panthers men are taking on the North Carolina Tar Heels this afternoon. That game gets underway at 4 o'clock. Duquesne Dukes hosting Loyola at 6 o'clock. The Pittsburgh Penguins last night beat the New York Rangers by a score of 3-2. They traveled to Philadelphia to take on the Flyers this afternoon.
WRCT weather.
Showers likely this afternoon, high of 38. Rain overnight with a low of 28. Mostly cloudy skies on Sunday with a high of 36. Monday mostly sunny, high 37. And then on Tuesday, snow likely with a high of 36. There is a winter weather advisory out for parts of the listening area. Could see some ice in higher elevations overnight. 1 inch of snow possible in areas north and east of the city. Ice accumulation somewhere between a glaze and 0.2 inches. That goes into effect this afternoon and continues through 1 a.m. on Sunday. Right now, just ahead of much more music, 34 in Washington County, 35 in Beaver County. It's 31 right now in Butler. 35 in West Mifflin at Allegheny County Airport and street level. At the corner of Forbes and Morwood in Oakland, it's 34 degrees. And here is something that will maybe tickle some memories for you. The tune is called Heavy Action by Johnny Pearson and his orchestra. And it used to be the theme of Monday Night Football. Us to the news. broadcasting this week from my laundry room while my back heals. Hopefully we'll be back in the studio next week. This is Radio 9 with me, Jay Thurber. Find me on Facebook, Mastodon, and Blue Sky at Jay Thurber Show, or check out the website at jaythurbershow.com. You're tuned to 88.3 WYRCT Pittsburgh and Tube City Online Radio in McKeesport. The news is next.
You're listening to Jay Thurber from WRCT Pittsburgh.
It's 2 o'clock. More music now.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I will restore integrity to the Justice Department, and I will fight violent crime throughout this country and throughout this world and make America safe again.
America's new Attorney General Pam Bondi hit the ground running on her first day in office, reinstating the federal death penalty and ordering a freeze on all funding to sanctuary cities. Despite her pledge to avoid politics, a new weaponization working group within the Justice Department will review federal criminal cases brought against President Donald Trump. A federal judge on Thursday prevented the administration from imposing a deadline on federal workers to resign and accept a payout plan. A new hearing has been scheduled for Monday. Meanwhile, a separate federal judge has extended an order that blocks the administration's spending freeze in response to a lawsuit brought by 22 states. And a third federal judge called Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship flagrantly unconstitutional and extended a temporary hold on that policy. House Democrats have unveiled legislation aimed at securing the personal data of Americans, while a group led by billionaire Elon Musk has access to the Treasury's payment system. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York says the bill counters what he calls an out-of-control power grab.
Why does Elon Musk and his minions need access to the names, social security numbers, addresses, birth dates, and bank account information of millions of Americans?
Democrats say the bill would limit data access to people with security clearances, which Musk and his team lack. A White House ordered that it gets the names of recently hired CIA employees in an unclassified email subject to public release is raising alarms. The request aligns with President Trump's larger plan to reduce the federal workforce, but former CIA Director John Brennan says the release of the names could compromise the agents.
This is part of, again, the Trump administration's revenge activities against individuals that may have been hired during the Biden administration.
The top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, Mark Warner of Virginia, calls the order a disastrous national security development. Anxiety continues to spread at schools about possible immigration raids. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten says when ICE agents go into classrooms, the students will be traumatized.
All children, regardless of immigration status, have the right to equal access to education. And through the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act, it can't be taken away.
Reports say more than 20 children were aboard deportation flights to Colombia last month. And Trump says a presidential commission will root out anti-Christian bias within the federal government. He says two failed assassination attempts made him feel he was divinely protected for some purpose. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Bourbon Street Beat.
Bourbon Street Beat.